What's up, guys? Welcome back. I have another very special guest with me today, an engineer by day, cosplayer by night, who recently, I found out, just left his Fortune 500 company job to be a cosplayer full time. Johnny Junkers.
Hi. Yeah. No, thanks for having me. Yeah, it's been a wild ride being a full-time creative. So no, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you for being here. I appreciate it. Johnny and I know each other from a League of Legends Facebook group chat called Can't End on a Loss.
Oh, man.
That's been our primary point of contact, yeah. I think, since I've known you. And the occasional ARAM here and there.
The occasional ARAM. You were not around for the era of Can't End on a Loss was a thing for a little bit, but then for a few years it was Buying Boots Are for Cowards.
Ah.
Yeah. Shoes are only, you only need movement speed if you're running away like a coward. So for like, I think for like a, I straight
all
up
all gas, no brakes.
Yeah, no brakes. And for a year we just didn't buy boots. It was the dumbest thing ever. Like,
you know, I respect a bit really hard, actually. I love that very much. Even I also loved the opposite of that, the buy a boot for each foot, despite them not stacking.
That was so stupid.
I remember that era as well. That was a good meme. So your cosplay name is Johnny Junkers, which came from a dog.
Yeah.
Page, a Facebook page that you had for your dog. Can you explain to all of us how that came to be?
Yeah, no, great question. So I was invited to a convention in Mexico, and this was before, you know, social media was like really, really a thing. So he just invited me through my personal page. And then they said, hey, do you have a public facing page? I'm like, yeah, sure. Here's this page that I was reserving for my dog. It was just Junkers Cosplay. It had, I think, him as a profile picture, and that was it. I just sent them that. And then, you know, after we did that convention, people started following the page looking for a cosplayer. And so I just said, well, it's already seated, so I might as well just roll with it.
Just lean into it.
Dude. And then, yeah, I think like 15 years later, this would be my career. So now Indy is a dog's name. Like, yeah, it is what it is.
I love your cosplay name. I think it's very iconic.
I appreciate you massaging my ego, trying to make me feel better.
I've always loved it, though.
Oh my goodness.
Always loved it. I thought it was a great name. It's very, I said this earlier to you, and I promise you it's a compliment, but it's giving me like final boss in Borderlands energy to
That's
me.
Fair.
Like, oh, now we got to go face Johnny Junkers. Like, he's guarding the treasure.
Oh, no. Yeah, like Handsome Jack or like, yeah, just a ridiculous human being. I guess I am a ridiculous human being, to be fair. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I guess it tracks. I guess it all tracks.
Right. Also, for those of you listening and not actually watching on YouTube, you care to explain the bandage? You have a anime protagonist bandage on your nose today.
I do have an anime protagonist bandage on here. So I do a lot of fighting in my spare time. So right now I'm very enamored with Muay Thai. I was sparring with I guess like one of the assistant coaches, and yeah, I got a clean shot right across the bow. So
a little tap, little tapper doodles.
Uh-huh. I didn't go down this time, but I mean, you know, martial arts, I think is like so great because even though you get hit with those sorts of things, it's really the essence of it is being able to look at fear in the face and really overcome it. So, so yeah, it sucks, but at least I look super anime.
Yeah,
I guess I look super anime.
Yeah. I have a personal trainer who I'm making a cosplay for. He was here earlier, actually, who's been teaching me Muay Thai.
Oh, shit.
It's so fun and I love it a lot. But I played soccer for like 7 years.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. As if I have to retrain my muscle memory to kick in a way that my body does not want to kick anymore. And it's been a rough transition, I'll say.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I was actually talking to like a soccer guy at the gym. Yeah, because in soccer, you can take that like running start. Yeah. You can take a step and like
you swing around with your hips.
Yeah. From Muay Thai, you have to be like at a standstill and just snap to like the position. It's completely different. Yeah.
I've been told that if you have done ballet before, it's better for Muay Thai. But soccer is so opposite that it's a hindrance most of the time.
Oh, well. Well, I hope you get those gains.
Thanks.
You'll be throwing spinning elbows in no time.
Working on my butt. Stay tuned for the results.
Get good on your teeth.
So how do you feel now that you've gone full time? What was the decision like to go full time cosplay? You're doing your own cosplay content for yourself, and then you're also making cosplays for other people, right?
Yeah. So kind of what the impetus for this was, it was kind of twofold. So I don't know if it's like TMI, but essentially in the winter, I had like a pretty major depressive episode. Like, I just want to be like full transparency. It's fine. I'm an open book, right? I'm 80% disabled from the VA, actually.
Really?
Yeah, I'm 80% disabled with and part of it is like depression and anxiety disorders. And pretty much the Fortune 500, like corporate world was just, it became simultaneously too much. And it, you know, you can make more money, but you can't make more time. I can't spend time with the people that I care about, like you and Martin and everyone else. And it doesn't matter how much money I'm making if I can't be around the people I enjoy, right? Mm-hmm. So I decided to leave that. Now cosplay is really the big thing, and I'll be honest, the security blanket of having a corporate paycheck coming in all the time, that was a huge adjustment. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, like, I've just been so blessed that, like, during the winter when cosplay projects weren't supposed to come in, like, they were coming in. So, you know, it's been a very, very anointed and blessed time. I'm just very happy with it, so... It's been great. I'm glad to be one of y'all now. One of y'all's.
Welcome to the club.
I know. Now we can make content and be cool and whatever. Yeah. That's dope.
Tell me about what your workshop looks like now that you've gone full time. You mentioned having a ton of 3D printers. You have a huge 3D printer.
Yeah.
What materials do you normally use? I know you originally started exclusively with PVC.
Mm-hmm.
So what materials are you working with today?
Yeah, no, great question. So right now I have 11 3D printers. The majority of them are Creality products. I'm on the fence whether or not I can actually recommend them. They are finicky. I do have the Elegoo Giga, Orange Storm Giga, which is like a 2.5 foot cubed monstrosity. But right now I mostly work out of 3D print filaments, so typically PLA. I've had a few outdoor activations that where it was make the prop, have it live outside for a week, which is pretty gnarly. And so it's either PETG or ABS at that point.
Yeah, PLA will melt, right?
Yeah, PLA will absolutely warp and melt and die an ignominious death. Mm-hmm. So
I've had that happen to me many times.
Oh yeah, it's terrible. So now we've been working out of PETG. And it's been pretty great. I did, like you said, I cut my teeth on Sintra, PVC foam. And it's good. It's really good. But what I've found is that, if I'm physically making something with my hands, that means I'm tied up with that activity, right? Mm-hmm. So what happens now is that now I'm tied up with that activity that, like, my productivity is tied to that. Mm-hmm. Now, with all the 3D printers, now the big advantage with that is now I have teams all over the United States, all over the world. Like, now I can just, like, bring in 3D modelers to work on different projects. And then now that I have so much printing bandwidth, it's just more efficient in order to do that. So, like, for me, in my opinion, in my use case, hand fabrication is kind of going away, unfortunately. But it is what it is.
Yeah. But that way you have these machines are basically mm-hmm. other hands, and they're yes. working on things while you're working on things.
Yes.
And you're maxing your productivity as much as you possibly can. So
yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, because so obviously my background is in engineering, right? Mm-hmm. And the only way to increase productivity, there's no way around this. It's either you get more people, more time, or a technology. And in this case, I opted for the technological advance in order to increase my productivity. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I started to bring in more people in order to do more modeling, get more models out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because the idea is I don't want to put in 12-hour days if I don't have to. Like the whole point of this endeavor was to actually like enjoy my life. But I'm still putting in 12-hour days anyway.
For now. Not forever.
I know.
I think you're going about it the right way, yeah. I would say. So what have been the projects you've been working on now that you have gone full-time?
Yeah. So the projects that I've been put on, so thankfully, yeah, Stella introduced me to Baby No Money. Mm-hmm. I'm ashamed to say I didn't know how well-known that guy was. Mm-hmm. And so they've been having me on projects. Can I talk about the Pokemon thing now? I probably can't because it won't be released. It won't be released by the time this goes out, so I won't talk about it.
We could talk about it as a concept. I don't think that it's...
I'll just talk about... I have those two other projects with them. It's fine. So for Alex, I had the Dr. Octopus project. That was really cool.
So cool.
That was really cool. The big challenge with that was to get the arms to hold a load like cantilevered over his shoulders, because like Iron Mouse and the rest of there are three other VTubers that he needed to stream, and to have that cantilevered out was kind of a challenge, right? So it had to be steel. So that's where the structural engineering came in. The other client that we've had this year, like that's been pretty consistent, is Tencent. So I think it's really funny. So in 2021, 2019, somewhere around there, I was the lone survivor for PUBG Mobile, the dude with the helmet. Mm-hmm. I just thought like, yeah, sure, I'll just show up. You can put Matt in accounting in this costume. It wouldn't really matter. But they kept calling me back. And I'm like, okay, cool. Yeah, awesome. This is great. And eventually they found out that I can fabricate things.
Yeah.
So I've been making, like, I think, for their anniversary earlier this year, we made an Anubis and a Cleopatra costume for them.
Nice.
We have another activation happening in the middle of this month, and yeah, they've been great. You know, I got that PUBG money. Apparently, PUBG Mobile specifically makes like so much money.
Yeah.
So they have a really healthy ad budget, and I just feel so blessed that I. Like while I was in corporate, I was just goofing around on Instagram, posting three times a year, and and somehow people liked my stuff enough to like, here's a bag of money so that you can make stuff for us. I'm like, thank you, I appreciate you.
Yeah, it's the dream, really.
Right, really, it is.
Yeah, but you've been cosplaying since, I have it here somewhere.
2010.
How long have you been cosplaying for?
Theoretically, 2010. Theoretically.
My notes here say you made your first cosplay in 2004 as Wolfwood from Trigun.
Oh, man. Well,
we researched you.
You did do your homework. So, yeah.
You've been Googled.
I know. I've been you-googled. You-googled. So, my first costume was in 2004. So I was in, I was actually a junior in high school. I'm aging myself right now. I was a junior in high school. I made Wolfwood, and that was really cool because I went from just like some nerdy kid in high school. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, I found my people and people think I'm cool. This is neat. And like people are taking your pictures. It's a lot for like a 16, 17 year old kid to like absorb. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I actually went into the military and I functionally stopped cosplaying for like 6 years. So that's why I always kind of say like, yeah, I've been cosplaying since 2010. Mm-hmm. But you're not wrong to say that, yeah, wow, you did do your research.
Thanks, Marika.
Wow.
You got. Is it true that you started cosplay by reading about Anime Expo in the newspaper?
How did you guys really did do your research, yeah. So So yeah, I distinctly remember it. I was living, well, yeah, I was like 16 or something. I was living with my parents. I was 16. I was just living with my parents. Yeah. I don't even know why I have to preface it with that. But
you're letting it all come back to
I
you.
I know, it's no. Yeah. I was in my parents' house, and then yeah, there's a I don't know why I was reading the newspaper. Like who at 16 reads the newspaper?
Is it actually the newspaper?
No, it was literally the newspaper. I distinctly remember that fact, and I was reading the newspaper for some reason, and then said like Anime Expo's in town.
Smoking your pipe.
Oh yeah, practically. Yeah, like all the Zoomers are gonna
lazy boy.
Dude, all the Zoomers are gonna be like, "What is a newspaper, and why were you reading one?" And yeah, I distinctly remember this. Yeah, because it was the newspaper. Like, this is what cosplay is in the newspaper, and then Anime Expo's gonna be around at some date.
Yeah.
Anime Expo, when I went, was at the Disneyland Hotel that doesn't exist now.
No way.
Yeah, I went there. Like, it was at the Disneyland Hotel. It was one hallway and like a small conference room. It was really small.
That's crazy. That was
my first Anime Expo. It was nuts. Like, to look at it now, and Anime Expo is just a fiasco.
Yeah. It got too big, I'd say.
I know. I was a junior in high school.
Wow.
At the Disneyland Hotel. Yeah, I feel old as AF.
Don't feel old. You're living your experiences.
Yeah. My lived historical black and white experience.
The reading the newspaper.
Hey, Martha, we're gonna go to Anime Expo. Yes.
Get your top hat.
Warm up the Model T.
Stop. That's so funny.
It's so bad.
Oh my God.
How did I'm impressed that she.
I'll ask Marika. Oh. I don't know. This is all them. They crushed it. So you, after the military, started cosplaying again in 2011 as Gazelle the Peacemaker from Trigun. So you love Trigun.
Yeah. I really like Trigun. Like, Yoshihiro Naito's like, he's like so prodigious. Like, because the thing that I like about Trigun is it's like coming to America from the Philippines. Like, the only thing I was trying to tell people about this. The only thing that I knew about America, I legitimately thought the streets were paved with gold. Like dead ass.
Really?
I really did. Like, dead ass. And I thought the only two things I knew about America, because we didn't have the internet back then, right?
Maybe disappointing you then, huh?
Dude, don't get me started. But I really thought the only thing that I knew about America is Batman, the one with I think the one before Batman Returns. So I thought it was either Gotham or the Marlboro commercials.
Okay.
Like, those are the only two things I knew about America, like, coming to America. So I thought, like, oh, okay, we're not going to go to Gotham. So it just has to be cowboys.
That's so funny. That,
it's a roundabout way of saying, that's just, like, cowboys has been imprinted on my brain. Uh-huh. So that's why I like Trigun so much. And then I just wanted to be a cowboy, I guess.
I've heard that Trigun is an incredible anime. I haven't seen it.
It's really good. I would give it a shot. I haven't watched all of the new one, but the old one is very like spaghetti western coded. I really enjoyed it. So I would check it out. It's fun.
I want to. I've heard nothing but fantastic things about it from a lot of people. Other than Trigun, what anime or video game or just nerdy franchises in general do you love?
Yeah. For like cosplay in general, or just to enjoy?
Things that you love, maybe that have inspired cosplays, or kind of shifted your like nerddom, if you will.
That's fair.
Yeah.
That's a fair question. So I think if I look at it, I think the biggest one is actually League of Legends.
Mm-hmm.
They have given a lot of support for cosplay, and there's just so many things to actually make from it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty like straightforward. You know, Riot, I have a pretty good relationship with the people at Riot, and they give us money in order to do stuff. And then I just legitimately like the universe, so I make things on my own. But I think the one that I don't talk about much anymore, I was actually thinking about it the other day, was Ruby.
Oh.
Yeah, so Ruby, yeah, you know, I'll just be raw on this, man. So like Ruby was, it was Monty, right? And I'm not sure if you got it in your notes, but Ruby, I was actually at the ground floor. I was there with Monty when he was like conceptualizing it.
Really? I don't have it in my notes.
I know.
You're giving me new information.
Yeah, you know, so I was there when he was conceptualizing it. Like I remember on Facebook Messenger, like we were going back and forth. He's telling me, he's like, yeah, I'm making this thing about like princesses and stuff. I'm like, I'm so confused, dude. And I don't know how to say this word. I'm very confused. Like, hey man, you want to make these weapons? I'm like, dog, I will. Yeah, these look dope.
Oh wow.
So when he released Ruby, he had me make the scythe, the gauntlets, and then there's like a rapier. The only one I didn't make at the time was for Blake.
Blake's.
Yeah, but I made that
little whip gun.
Yeah. I made that later down the line. And for the whip gun, it was kind of cool. I made it, right? And then I showed Monty. I'm like, hold this reverse grip. And then he held it and is, I'm like, see the problem? Because like your pinky can't like go onto the trigger on like the guard. So like you can see, I think it is like season one or season two. Like later down the line, they actually have her go pinky up. Because I'm like, yeah, Monty, this doesn't make sense. And then he went, oh. And for Sun, it is actually kind of cool. I don't know if they showed it. I'm pretty sure they showed it in the show. So he actually gave me Sun Wukong to cosplay before he came out. And then when I was making the bracers, I went like, wait a minute, this is kind of like, he's kind of like a rough and tumble guy. So I put like battle damage all over it.
Mm-hmm.
And then like Monty's like, oh, that's dope. And so he added it after the fact. And he like, it was so cool.
To
right?
match you.
Yeah, it was so cool to have. Because like, yeah, he was a dork too.
Mm-hmm.
And this is my favorite story about Monty. I miss him. And so I had Sun Wukong for ALA because he wanted all of us to cosplay his characters. And I made the gunchucks. And I remember this because I made the scythe and I was giving it to the girl that was going to be Ruby. And so I'm like, okay, Monty, do not throw these around like nunchucks. The chains come apart.
Oh.
They will absolutely come apart. Do not, I told him like explicitly, like, do not nunchuck these.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, yeah, sure, cool.
Totally.
I'm like, okay.
Definitely won't.
So I, yeah. And then 1 minute later, and I actually learned this after he passed away, is that they're like, yeah, dude, he absolutely did that. And apparently it went like careening across like the pool deck. Like just like gone.
Clutching my pearls.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And then he had to like go find like glue to put some stuff back on it. And he just ran off. I'm like, but I actually never found out until after he passed away that people told me, because I took a long time getting back because I ran into a friend when I had the site. So it took me a while, but it was so funny. That guy really, really loved his art, his craft. And then, yeah, Ruby was like a really, really big component of like my nascent cosplay journey. And I honestly really miss Monty because we used to talk all the time about just like dumb like weapon concepts. Mm-hmm. And it was just, I just miss him so much.
Yeah, I love Ruby. I loved it when it came out. I specifically loved Yang as a character.
Yes.
I cosplayed every version of Yang that came out when I first started cosplaying. So I agree with you. I think Ruby as a story was amazing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think the characters are amazing. Everything about it.
Yeah. I haven't kept up with it, but I knew way ahead of time she was going to lose an arm. And then, yeah, just screw it. I'm just going to like talk freely.
Yeah.
He told me at some point the bike was supposed to become a mecha. I don't know if that ever became a thing, but that was supposed to be a thing. And we talked about how it's supposed to transform and yada, yada, yada.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm just going to go on the record, even though this is like controversial. And I got the receipts. So if anyone wants to like yell at me that I'm not, Junkers and Zvi are the same dog.
Oh.
Deadass.
Wait, really?
Yeah. So So Zwei is modeled after Junkers.
No way. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So like, I think what on the wiki, honor. It has it as like some other dog. They're like, oh, it's like some lady, like no disrespect to her, obviously. Like, but it's like a different breed altogether. And I distinctly remember that he's like, hey, do you have pictures of Junkers I can use? I'm like, yeah, sure. And I send it to him, didn't think much of it. And then all of a sudden, like, he's like, yeah, dude, you're going to really like Zwei. Like, why is he named Zwei? Because it's like Ein. Like, oh, come on, dude. Come on, dude. But yeah, when it came out, he's like, dude, what do you think? I'm like, yeah, this is dope.
Oh, that's so cute. Yeah. Memorialized forever. That's awesome.
I met his brother, too. I think I think that was a very nice thing. Like, after he passed away, I have Ruby signed by Monty. And then when I badgered Neith to have lunch or dinner in Japan, I had him sign Ren, the green guy, right?
I think so. It's been a long time since I've seen it.
Yeah, but I had him sign that, and it gave me some sort of closure, honestly. To have the two brothers somewhat together, mm-hmm. I was like, this brings me closure. I really like it. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, that is, I feel like, such a terrible, tragic loss for the entire community as a whole. Rest in peace.
I got you new information.
I had no idea. You surprised us. I think I was in the same era, I think, timeline-wise, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. as you, as far as like Ruby League of Legends. Mm-hmm, that's mm-hmm. primarily what I cosplayed when I first started as well. The designs were so cool, though. It was hard not to, when League was putting out so many cool skins over and over again, you're like, oh, I got to do this one now, and then I got to do this one now, and it just like never ends. When did you start competing in costume contests? Have you competed in many?
Yeah, so I started competing in cosplay contests maybe, like, I think I was goofing around with them, like, while I was still in the military. So, like, maybe, like, 2006, 7, somewhere in that era. But nothing, like, terribly big. Like, Anime Vegas was probably the biggest one that I competed at for a little bit. And we'd get best in show just by dint of, we were just the loudest and we had the most people. So it wasn't like, I wouldn't say it was like a huge achievement or anything. I would say the proudest moment that I had is that after many years of like, you know, just randomly trying to do stuff, like, yeah, I won Call to Cosplay. That was pretty cool. But I think winning the League of Legends cosplay contest was like so cool. Crazy. Uh-huh. So I'll tell you a story about that. So this was in 2020. Before, you know, I think it came out before COVID was a thing, but then it had to transition to COVID shenanigans. Mm-hmm. So I go through the entire process. I make my costume. I place in top 8 or whatever. And then I had to do the final round. And I did my final judging. And then I distinctly remember this. They said, winners will be announced on like someday at whatever time. I went, okay, cool. And it was sometime in the morning, somebody like 10 or 11 a.m. And I remember I was at work and I was working the whole day. And I finally, I got out of work at like 3 or 4 o'clock. I get like a Facebook Messenger thing from like Mel, who is the Riot person running it. And she goes, hey, have you checked out the results? I'm like, no, Mel, I'm working just like you. I got stuff to do. She's like, you should probably check it out. I'm like, okay, I'll do it when I get home. And then when I got home, I distinctly remember this message. Mel, did I win? Because you would think that they would like tell you that you won like ahead of time, but I found out just like everyone else. So like Mel, did I win? Did I just win this? He's like, yeah, you won. I'm like, oh, okay. I guess I'm gonna go to Norms tonight. I don't know. I don't know where I went for
dinner. Time to boot up my Riot client.
Right.
What cosplay did you win with?
I won with the God King Darius costume. So that was the Yeah, that was actually the last like Syntra build I went like all out on. Mm-hmm. Cause after that I used the prize money to start investing in 3D printing and mm-hmm. researching that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I had like a smoke machine. I had the lights. I took a lot of time to do the finish work. I tried real hard on that costume.
And it paid off.
Yeah, it did. It did. So
I feel like when I think of your cosplays, I think of like larger than life, big, beautiful, like armor builds and mm-hmm. stuff. Is that what you would say your calling card is?
Yeah, I would say that. I think the big thing that I think I'm trying to stress right now that it's difficult to assail what we've made is the big armor because we can. So, right, I made the Tokon Iron Man. I made that in like a week, mm-hmm. right? Because I had a bunch of other activations to do for like Bandai Namco and yada, yada, yada. And then I was able to print an Iron Man suit that hadn't been printed before mm-hmm. in a week, go to Evo, place top 8. And I think the funniest thing is like people were all saying like, oh man, you're gonna win, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, first of all, no, I'm not going to win. Mm-hmm. Like, I know this for a fact because this is not a competition level costume. Like, I just kind of threw this together in a week. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I was able to place top 8 over people that had months to work on the build. And I think that's really where, like, the professional cosplayer component comes in. It's not so much, like, my quality is a lot better than people. It's just, like, I can get a pretty decent outcome in a very short amount of time. Mm-hmm. Like I'm not the best at making stuff. I can just make stuff on a tight time crunch because you know how it is. This whole industry is just
absolutely.
like, hey, we need this costume like 3 days ago. Like, oh, oh, thanks dog.
And a lot of times companies will know months in advance, but they won't get the go ahead until like 4 days before the thing. And you'll be talking back and forth with months time. And you're like, oh, the timeline is so long. This is good. This is awesome. And then like 1 week goes by and they're waiting for the red tape someone needs to sign off on. And then the contract hasn't come yet. And then you send the contract back with corrections. And by the time everything's all said and done, you have what, like 3 days, 4 days to do the most insane thing you've ever done. It's a crazy world culture that we have here as cosplayers.
No, because everyone thinks that cosplay is just, or like, I guess like cosplay at the professional level, mm-hmm. they think it's like you making stuff for like Anime Expo is a hobby. It's like, oh, I got like 1 or 2 months to like really dial everything in and yada, yada, yada. I'm like, no, it's you have 10 days to do a thing. You mm-hmm. have to have like, you have to get their brand approval at day 5 of like what colors you're using.
Yeah.
Like what Pantone colors you're freaking using. And then like at day 9, you have to have it completed and then double approved by that. I'm going like, okay, dude, this is like nuts.
It's nuts.
Yeah.
It's
so
crazy.
It's not making stuff in your kitchen, having a good time. I mean, I'm still like, we're still having a good time, but it's not like.
But the stakes are high.
The stakes are very high.
Yeah.
Like.
Higher than for funsies.
Oh, yeah. I think the color matching stuff like drives me crazy. Like,
honestly.
Like, dude, it's just gonna change under different lighting.
Yeah.
And Martin can just color correct stuff anyway. Yeah. It doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't freaking matter.
It's so true though, because say you paint it outside or you paint it in your living room or something with like warm tungsten lighting, and then you go to the con has fluorescent, cool toned blue overhead lighting, that you're never gonna be able to have a consistent color forever and ever.
It's baffling. It's like honestly baffling. And maybe this is like just some companies are just very difficult to work with, as we all know. And mm-hmm. they have a very tight control of their IPs, and they're very, very concerned about how things are represented. It's like fair enough. But I think a lot of them don't, well, the ones that I've been working with have a good understanding, but I'm sure you've encountered it where it's like you're stifling the creative process. Therefore, the outcome is not going to be that great.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so difficult to communicate that to like a PM that's like kind of detached from mm-hmm. the whole affair. Because I get it. I was a PM too. And it's And it's just like, I need numbers to hit KPIs. That's all I'm like functionally looking at it.
Yeah.
And yeah, this is a tangent, but I think it's pretty dope. But like, that's why I really like working for Alex or Baby No Money, because he's a fellow artist. Mm-hmm. And he wants you to do your best. He yeah. wants, like, the tone and tenor of his projects are so much more entertaining because it's like, oh, I am an artist. I want to see you do your best as an artist as well. And he gives us that freedom. So I think it's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, Alex is cool. I like him.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
It's been great every time I've met him. So you've now won competitions. You've mm-hmm. competed a lot. And now you judge mm-hmm. here and there.
Yeah.
How do you feel judging competitions? What do you look for when you're judging? And if somebody's competing and you had to give your top tips, say, yeah. what would they be?
Yeah, I know. Great question. So with like competition builds, I think this is a dirty secret. I think other judges will probably like ice pick me in the eyeball. But let's all be real.
Okay.
If a costume comes through the door, you know within 30 seconds if it's like, if it's gonna be top five. Like,
really?
I mean, let's be real. If mm-hmm. if Cardboard Gundam walks in, it's like, okay, guys, this is not top five, so I can kind of like chill.
Right, right.
But then if you know, the most perfect Sailor
Cardboard Moon. Cardboard Gundam is so funny.
Yeah, I mean, like, I know we're all supposed to be nice to all the cosplayers, and that fact check true, but I mean, at a competition level, you look at it, it's like, you're just, quantitatively and qualitatively, you're mm-hmm. just not in the top five. Like, I don't know how to state it. Mm-hmm. And, but if you see something, if you see something immaculate, it's like, okay, now I have to pay attention. But even then, you have a general sense of what the quality of the costume is. Mm-hmm. And to be fair, when you're judging a costume, for me, the first pass is what does the overall costume, what feeling does this elicit? And I know that might be nebulous, but we all know a costume that looks good, mm-hmm. that like gives you that feeling of like, that is crisp.
Mm. It's kind of inspiring.
Yeah. Like that is great. That is crisp. That is like, is nice. Like, it has to give that feeling. Mm-hmm. And then obviously, I guess it's kind of like dating in the sense.
Okay.
So, but you get that feeling of like, man, this is really crisp. And then you
have to be in love at first sight.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. And then you have to like get up close and then like really verify it, right?
Fall in love with the details.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh,
right?
Wow.
Right?
I see it.
Right? Right? Yeah. Let's be real. This is the first time I've articulated this. So, let's be real. When you're dating, or let's say you have a pool of 10 potential partners.
Okay.
Let's be real. Within like the first like 30 seconds, 45 seconds, you know who's dateable, who's not dateable. Let's all be very frank about this. Like, everyone, like, right?
Yeah, I know.
I'm not wrong. Why are you booing me? I'm right.
The metaphor is there.
Yeah. And then all you're doing after that is like, okay, so I think this person has these qualities. And then you go and investigate, like, no, they're actually an asshole. So that's the same thing.
Gaslighting under those seams.
Right, right. And then you get the costume. It's like, okay, this Sailor Moon looks freaking great. Oh, it is freaking mm-hmm. great. Oh, like this Kirito like looks freaking great. Oh, it's all store-bought garbage.
There's
okay.
hot glue coming out.
Yeah, there's
off
a hot
the
glue.
Sides.
There's a hot glue back here.
You made me think you finished your seams. Yeah. You did it.
And you're actually three raccoons in the Kirito trench coat. Like, how dare? Only one competitor per costume. How dare you be three raccoons? That's actually, I like that metaphor. I just made that
I think
up.
It's pretty accurate. I like it too.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. You're free to, everyone's free to use that. Everyone's free to use that one.
So if somebody was making a costume for a contest and wanted to win, what would you tell them is important?
Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
To focus on.
No, that's really great. So what I did when I won the League of Legends cosplay contest is I said to myself, okay, what are the things I know I am good at?
Mm.
And then I focused in on those things.
Okay.
Because the thing about cosplay contests, it's not about how many things you do. And that is a thing. Like if you can do like 10 different skills, like you can do leatherworking, electronics, like armor making, wig work, if you can do all those things at like a very high level and execute at a high level, you're going to win. But the thing is it, I would rather you do 5 things at like a level 9.5 or 10 out of 10 than do 10 things at like a level 8. Right? So it's okay. Better that you do the most things you can at the absolute highest level that you can. Mm-hmm. Because to be honest, I feel like even despite whatever the rule set is, mm-hmm. is you will get dinged more for errors than you will get points for really immaculate work. So for example, it was very unfortunate. There's a cosplay contest. I can't remember what year it was, but I do distinctly remember that there's a very large Mordekaiser. He was dope. He was super dope. And I can't remember what the second place was. I think it was a Leona. I remember the first place was a Zyra. But we tallied up everything, and it was on a knife edge. It was essentially on a knife edge that the Mordekaiser was going to either be second or third, mm-hmm. because the Zyra, I believe, was just so overwhelming. She did the thing where she did like 10 different things at like a 9.5 and above. It's like, okay, you're unassailable. Like, yeah. Have a nice day. Mm-hmm. But between him and second place, it was like neck and neck. And I was like really rooting for him. But then I didn't have a leg to stand on because I think it was a Leona. And Leona just physically had everything. She did everything really well, mm-hmm. But she physically had everything. He didn't have the prop, the hammer. And so that one thing, even though he's like an 8-foot tall fiasco, he looked freaking great, mm-hmm. but he didn't have the hammer. It's like that one thing just... Boom.
It's like an iconic part of his.
Yeah. So I guess it's do all the things that you can do very well and then pick a costume that both A, allows you to showcase all of those things, mm-hmm. because obviously showing up as shirtless Goku is not going to do, like, you just can't, there's not enough real estate to actually like showcase your skills.
Yeah.
And be able to like bring everything to the table, right?
Right.
Right. So if you can't make the hammer, in his case, it was, I think he couldn't ship the hammer. So you also have to take those considerations in, like the calculus changes in multi-city competitions. So yeah, it's just have everything and do everything as much as you can well. Those are the two things I would say.
Yeah. Okay. So would you say it's better to focus on 5 skills you're really, really good at than 10 skills you're not good at? You're not as good at.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. Like, you need to show your best. You might be able to do one thing and like learn one thing on the fly, because mm-hmm. That's what I did for Darius. Is I like, okay, I don't know lighting too well, but I can at least, I have enough time. I'm so good at everything else, I have enough time to like learn this, mm-hmm. but for the most part, you don't have time to be goofing around with like new stuff the whole time. Like, when you're, because, right, kind of think of it this way, like, when you're sparring, that's the time to experiment. So mm-hmm. The sparring in cosplay is like going to cons, goofing around, having a good time.
Right.
But when it comes to brass tacks, when you're competing, like, you gotta just do the things that you've already learned during the practice time.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is there some things that you can think of that are common mistakes that people make when they enter costume contests?
Yeah, so common mistakes.
Your face.
Yeah, because, well, the thing is, like, I make them. Because I'm thinking about, like, the Iron Man costume that I made for Evo. Because, mm-hmm. like, the layman, all the layman sees is like, oh, big Iron Man costume. He's probably going to win. I'm like, I am not even close, guys. Like, I am not even close. And the big thing is just having your I's dotted and your T's crossed. Mm. Like, that, again, it really comes down to like the details. Like, Iron Man from afar looked very good. That's all I wanted. I just wanted to get in front of Sony marketing in order to hopefully get some kind of opportunity there. Mm-hmm. It just I just got to encourage, like, you should just go compete. You have nothing better to do. I'm like, fair, fair, fair. I'll stand in this line.
Might
fine.
As well.
Yeah, uh-huh. I know, right? So it wasn't, it was never meant to be a competition grade costume. So a lot of the straps were like exposed. I think like the back, my policy, my personal policy for costumes that are for myself is like the back barely matters.
Yeah.
Because I am like, I've been cosplaying for like 15 years now. I don't know what the backs of any of my costumes look like. So I'm just like,
I think we all operate that way.
Yeah. So I'm like, the back doesn't matter. Like, but obviously in a competition, the back matters.
Yeah.
So when I entered, I'm like, oh, this is a fiasco back here. Do
don't
not
look at that.
Don't look at that.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I would say that it's really making sure all of the details are in there. Like your straps are nice and like ordered. Your costume's ironed. I can't believe I have to say that. Your costume is freaking ironed.
That's a big one, I think.
I can't believe that people enter high-level competition and then they're like, oh, I forgot to iron it. Like, what is wrong with you?
Yeah, I see that a lot.
It boggles my mind.
Yeah.
I have an excuse. I actually don't own an iron.
But do you have a steamer?
I don't own.
Ooh, yeah, I have like four. You can have one.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, because I have to. Yeah, I don't. You can leave it in. I don't care. But it's really funny because I have a costume I'm making for a client, and I'm gonna go to Mancy's house like on like sometime this week. And I said, hey, Mancy, I need to iron this. Can I use your iron? She's like, why are you coming all the way here to use an iron? I'm like, I don't own one.
That's crazy.
I had to pick something up at her house anyway, but like,
yeah, but how do you iron your shirts for like fancy events and stuff?
I get them, I go to a cleaner. I pay someone like the $3-4 or whatever.
All right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That is fair. That is an option. That's fair.
Yeah.
Amazing. Well, thank you for your insight. you are the winner of season one of Call to Cosplay, which is a show I can't say I'm familiar with. What was that show on?
It was on Mix TV.
Mix TV.
So let me tell you the lore.
Tell me about Call to Cosplay.
I'll tell you the lore of Call to Cosplay.
Okay.
So Call to Cosplay was the brainchild of Victoria Holden when she was at Crunchyroll, mm-hmm. and George Chung, who's now the owner, CEO of Jungo TV. So I'm still friends with both of them, right? He owns Black Belt Magazine, but that's a whole other story. But they came up with they wanted to make a show that's kind of like Chopped, but for cosplay.
Mm-hmm.
And
competition show,
yeah,
make costumes mm-hmm. really fast,
where you make really fast and there's like a secret ingredient and then yada yada yada. So that one was done on like a shoestring budget because it was like, you know, it was they wanted a proof of concept for Crunchyroll. And so what happened was they all had the idea was that they all had each episode was like one person versus another, and then one person versus another, and yada yada yada. And then then all of them at the end would compete against each other or some format like that.
Okay.
And I was supposed to be like the Akuma character that came in, and then was like, oh, we're gonna have one more competitor, and so I just came in, and then because I was like the only armorer there, so I. Just by weight of armor, like armor is always like pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm.
So just by coming in with like guts that I made in like 8 hours out of like mine was Play-Doh and coat hangers.
Your secret ingredient.
Yeah, I got
used?
Two because I was like set on hard mode.
Oh my God.
So I made that and yeah, I won. And it was funny because the prize, because it was such a shoestring budget. I love you, George. It was like a bunch of like donated like anime merch from I forget the vendor, but I remember because Champ, you know Champ?
I don't think so.
Okay, but I remember Champ got second place in a Vincent, and he's like, "You're gonna take the Asuna figure, aren't you?" I'm like, "Why were you gonna take the Asuna figure?" He's like, "I wanted it. Well, I'm gonna take it."
Well, now that you say that.
Yeah, and I took the asana figure and I still have it like on my bookshelf. Like, screw you, champ. I got the asana figure.
Send them pictures every now and then.
I do.
Good.
But it was nice because afterwards, they got greenlit a few more seasons, and I got brought on as a judge for the subsequent seasons, and I got to learn a lot about how like reality TV is filmed and things like that. So like some insight on that. I didn't know this. Maybe you knew this. Maybe other people knew this. But like how they would film it is, I actually wouldn't be there for like them making it. So what I would do is I would come in. Yeah, this is just like pulling the veil. I'm so sorry. I'm sorry, George. But what I would do is I would come in. They would say like bring three sets of clothes. So I would come in with three sets of clothes, and there would be a producer reading like their notes, like, oh, X contestant is doing X, like Y thing, comment on it. And they'd be like, oh man, it looks like they're going to burn themselves with a hot glue gun, blah, blah, blah. And I do my color comp, but I never actually see them.
Oh.
And then like, okay, good. We're done with that one. Now change clothes. And then we're going to do another one.
You get all
one.
The shots? That's yeah. So wild.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it was wild. We'd film like 3-4 episodes in like one day. It was nuts.
Wow.
Yeah, so.
You made the one cosplay.
Yep, I made the one cosplay. And then I think I judged like 2 seasons across like, it was like 3 or 4 cities. Oh, man. Well, hopefully she doesn't see this. But so I had... I'll tell you a story about that one. Maybe, you know, just let me burn on this one. I thought it was hilarious. After the fact, it's been a long time, but
we can save it for Patreon if you're worried.
We'll save it for Patreon so I don't get in trouble.
Your secret ingredient was Play-Doh and coat hangers.
Yeah.
How did you incorporate that into your cosplay?
So I was making Guts, and I think it was like the Golden Age Guts. So his sword looks like a giant butter knife, but there's a bracket at the very bottom for the cross guard. And I made the cross guard out of coat hangers. And then wherever I was going to use epoxy sculpt or Bondo, I used Play-Doh. It did not work out.
I was going to say.
It did not work out very well, but if you just like leave it alone and don't like sand it or anything, it kind of works.
Okay.
So like I kind of bent the rules like, well, you didn't tell me how much of the costume I had to use it on. I technically used it, so leave me alone.
Sure.
I think I got away with, the Play-Doh also. Are you familiar with the ketchup method of painting?
No.
So this is like a Star Wars thing. So what you do, so say if you want like a blaster shot or something like that, what you do is you paint the entire armor silver, and then you put like ketchup, barbecue sauce, some other piece, some other thing that you can wipe off.
Mm.
You do that. So say I have a breastplate, I put some ketchup on it, and it's all silver. I paint over what it's going to be, so like green or something in like Boba Fett. And then I wipe off the ketchup, and then there's like, you know, like a blaster shot or like damage or whatever. It looks organically.
That's crazy. I never thought about that
exactly,
before,
right?
Ever.
So I did, yeah. So
that's
big brain.
So cool.
And then, so I just did the same thing, but with Play-Doh. Play-Doh's not ideal, but it still works because I can still remove it.
Yeah.
So that's what I did. And I got the same like, oh shit. I got like that same reaction. I'm like, well, I'm like, oh, like galaxy big brain. Mm-hmm. Oh shoot. Like
that's super, super cool.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
So it was big galaxy big brain.
So when you have these like crazy deadlines, like make a cosplay in 8 hours or make a giant cosplay for a brand in 2 days, how do you go about starting? Like, okay. What's your process like?
All right. So, yeah, I've found that the process is you have to make the schedule. You really, like, especially with these multi-part costumes where you can have a lot of things working concurrently, if you spend 3 or 4 hours with all the pertinent people working in a room, put out the schedule, and this is my PM talking, but it's called critical path management. And what you have to do is you have to identify what's actually the thing that's going to be driving the whole thing. So if you think of like armor, right? like, say I have like an armored suit, but I also have to do the undersuit, right? You can kind of intuitively understand that the undersuit kind of doesn't matter. I can like make that whenever. It's really like the driver is going to be the armor. If the armor doesn't get done in a timely manner, the entire project will go to pot.
Right.
So on more complex projects, I think this last one that I had, it was actually like the wings on Alex's costume that was a critical path. So if that didn't get modeled, engineered, printed, so I had to like go about doing that first, despite everything else. And because I thought it was actually going to be the silicone molds for his custom scales, but it was actually the wings. So going about getting the critical path schedule out first is like really the big thing, because an ounce of, what's the saying? An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Because if you just prepare as best as you can, even if you're on a super compressed timeline, if you know what is the thing that is like the actual driver of the schedule, then you can really like attack that one thing and hopefully not get bowed up. So this last one with Alex, the big one was the like custom fabric we had to get printed. That was the actual driver. So we all attacked that and then we got it across the finish line. So yeah.
Yeah. That's, I think, great advice for people, especially people starting cosplays a week before the convention.
Oh my goodness.
Or anything like that.
Oh my goodness.
What we were all guilty of. Well, when it comes to cosplay and props in general, you have mentioned that Yaya Han was a big inspiration for you, and also Kai Norman.
Oh yeah, yeah. So less Yaya. Yaya has been a really great friend over the years. She kind of coached me on like what it like really means to be like a cosplayer, like in a more abstract sense. Honestly, yeah, no, Kai's been really great. I forget what they've changed their cosplay name so many times. I think they're under Yokai Props now. But what they've been... So when I made Gazelle, the Peacemaker, super ugly costume, I sat next to them at a con, and they thought I was impressive enough to like talk to. And they made some really good costumes, and they actually invited me to their house to like work on stuff. So that's actually where I learned Syntra. I learned Syntra working under Kai. And then later on, like I made my first Syntra costume. It was very mid, as all things are, right? Like you start out, it's very
start
mid.
Start somewhere, yeah.
Yeah. I was blessed to make my first thing, and it was mid. It could have been hot garbage.
Yeah.
But Kai actually got me on Mass Effect 2. They got contracted for Garrus Vakarian from Mass Effect 2.
Yeah. Love and, Garrus. Yeah. I'm a big Garrus fan.
Yeah. So Kai taught me how to make stuff on Garrus, right? And so that was like where I really cut my teeth on like the conditions of a professional setting, even though we're in their freaking backyard. But the professional setting, how things are difficult, like how to really dot your I's, cross your T's. And I think that's like a big thing about how I cosplay now, is that if Kai didn't take me under their wing, I would not be where I am, like full stop. So I'm not a gatekeeping person. I am an open book. If essentially all my stuff is open source. And if I don't get back to you, it's not because I don't want to. I'm just like,
I'm booked and busy
and yeah. Lucky runs all of my my DMs now. So, but I will freely give information, because I really think that the rising tide raises all ships, right?
Totally. I agree.
Yeah. So yeah, if Kai was not there, would not be here. 100%.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Kai.
Yeah.
And Yaya and everyone who paved the way for cosplay as a career. I was going to ask if you had any advice or guidance from them that you've taken and can pass along, but I think you answered that question already.
Yeah. I think the only thing I can add, honestly, is that like something that stuck with me from Yaya was that two things. Well, one thing really is that when you meet someone at a convention and they admire you or they know your brand or they know you, right? Mm-hmm. They're going to meet you at some, let's just quantitatively say, like, you know, 8 out of 10 excitement level. You have to meet or exceed that excitement level in order to give them a positive memory, right? And I've really taken that to heart. And I think that's why, maybe it's just me, maybe it's whatever, but the reason that I get so tired at like cosplay events, like when I'm working at a booth and things like that, because people think, oh, you're just standing around. It's like, no, I'm there. And then I'm constantly like meeting people and I need to either A, represent the brand that I'm there. And they're already like, oh man, it's Anime Expo, blah, blah, blah. So they're at like a 7 or an 8. So I have to be at like a 9 or a 10,
yeah,
realistically. And being at a 9 or a 10.
For like, 8 hours.
For 8 hours, like.
With a wig,
yeah,
and a costume and some uncomfortable shoes and contacts. Yeah, it's like taking poison damage all day. Like your health bar is just slowly ticking away until it's completely empty. When you take the cosplay off, I feel like I completely just perish on the hotel bed.
Oh, 100%. Even like Lone Survivor. Lone Survivor is just clothes.
Yeah, the Fallout and, costume.
Yeah. No, the PUBG guy.
Oh,
yeah,
sorry.
It's okay. The PUBG guy. I remember at PAX, like, yeah, afterwards, I would legitimately, people were like, oh, let's go party. I would go back to my room. I would just draw a bubble bath and just sit there.
Just sit there just and sit disassociate. There.
Yeah, just disassociate and going like, I have to be up in like 10 hours and my feet are on fire.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't, and this is day 2. My feet are going to fall off. Like, I hate my life. But, you know, you keep meeting people and you just have to be like, you have to be engaged the entire time.
Yeah.
Why else are you there?
It is super, super fulfilling and also exhausting.
Oh, yeah.
So I understand completely where you're coming from. Well, what projects can we look forward from you in the near future? And where can everyone find you online?
All right. Well, we talked about it a little bit is I wanted to do that Mario Kart bike.
Yeah.
So we're going to, hopefully we can get you on for the, for Peach on that. We're going to do that for
making
our
a Princess
portfolio.
Peach.
It'll be so dope. It'll be so dope. I just want to make big, dumb stuff. You can find me across all socials, at Johnny Junkers. I think, yeah, all my socials are uniform now. They're all uniform now. Thank you, Lucky. So yeah, at Johnny Junkers, we have a YouTube now. We're trying to get stuff, but mostly Instagram and now TikTok. Mm-hmm. Do you know what Book Talk is?
I am familiar with the concept of Book Talk.
I made a bunch of Lone Survivor content for PUBG Mobile, and I thought, like, I looked up a bunch of content. I'm like, these are funny, ha ha ha. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, Lucky, how come all the comments are like thirsty women? I thought, like, right, because I made one where I'm like dragging a trash bag or something, like, hey, let's go hide a body. I'm like, ha ha ha, it's gonna be funny, like people are gonna be like, tee hee hee.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, then there's a comment on there, it was just like a pair of like jeans with like a heart on the crotch that was like wet, and I'm going, explain, Lucky, explain what is happening.
You're getting thirst comments.
But I'm in I'm fully clothed. I don't understand.
But in the PUBG costume, that's like a tight fitted button down shirt. That's what the Book Talk girlies are into. That's where it's at.
You're speaking to me as if this is like just
That's where it's at. That's what I've observed. I'm not necessarily a part of Book Talk, but I'm adjacent to Book Talk, I'd say.
Book Talk.
I have some friends who've explained it to me, but yeah. I think it's the costume.
I just work here.
It's
apparently.
It's arms in a fitted button-down shirt. I'm telling you now.
I'm too old for this.
Well, what's how was getting trained by the Blue Ranger?
Oh.